Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and here as always is my co-host Steve.
John, how are you today?
Good, good. Same as usual, just trying to survive the world these days. We got a new change at least this week. We have a vice presidential pick, Kamala Harris.
Somebody from the Bay Area as well, which is great.
Yeah, she went to the Berkeley, I think, USF School of Law.
No. She went to Howard in D.C.
But for law school, she was in San Francisco.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I think she's also born in Oakland, in the East Bay.
So the reason we bring her up, actually, is she has a lot of connections in Silicon Valley. She's friends with Sheryl Sandberg, it looks like.
Yes, apparently she's the preferred nominee pick for Silicon Valley because of her connections with the industry, being both a Bay Area native and sort of being in the scene, but also there's talks of the fundraising that she'll do during the campaign from the Valley. She's also, as you mentioned, tight with the industry, especially with big tech, right? There's pictures of her schmoozing with Sheryl Sandberg. She apparently went to Sean Parker's wedding, famously played by Justin Timberlake in the Social Network movie. So I think she's
Now I know who you're talking about, right?
Now you know who it is, yeah.
Justin Timberlake,
so,
got it.
Yes, that guy. So I think she's the preferred choice for the Valley, which is interesting.
Yeah, good thing big tech will finally have some power. Man, those poor guys, Amazon, Facebook.
They need all the help they can get.
Yeah, Zuckerberg, he just became a 100 billionaire or sent a billionaire. I forget how they said it.
100 unicorns, we'll just call him that.
So I think he'll be invited to the fundraising dinners.
I'm sure he will be.
Well, we're lucky to have Russell Perry, the CEO of Company, that's Company with a K, .com, who's a very innovative regtech. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Hello, Steve. Hello, John. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining. And you're coming all the way from Vienna via the intertubes. First of all, I'm kind of curious, how is the coronavirus working out these days in Vienna?
We've been able to have a very, very low infection rate per capita, and now we're just opening up the economy again, and let's see where that goes.
Yeah, hopefully that happens smoothly. Well, I'm sorry, tell us about Company and what you guys do.
Company is a regtech platform. We focus on global business verification and KYC under the anti-money laundering regulation in Europe and Southeast Asia. And we also have a new bill on the Hill for a new anti-money laundering law in the United States. And we built the technology to help our clients, mainly financial institutions, insurers, to verify companies instantly in real time based on government sources or what they call primary sources to ensure they not only comply with the law, but they have the highest veracity, highest quality of data to ensure that they are compliant and can service their customers quicker. We have four product lines, and we operate internationally, headquarters here in Austria, about 50 employees with sales desks also in Singapore, London, and New York.
What is the bill that you have on the Hill? I'm so curious about this, the AML bill.
So the bill that's currently going to the Senate is about identifying and keeping records on the ultimate beneficial owner of who owns a company, who are the people behind the company, and to ensure not just anti-money laundering, but also anti-terrorist financing. So in Europe, this was already implemented in 2018, very, very strict rules with personal liability of the executives, with penalties of up to 10% of global revenues of the companies. And this is massive, where for the first time, the penalties cost more than implementing measures, technology, regtech, to ensure compliance. And the U.S. is now following, and I believe it will be very, very strict, a little bit different flavor than we see in Europe. But if this passes, this will really ensure the anti-money laundering measures that for the first time will be taken serious. And this might also be driven a lot by the COVID economic stimulus program. So what we've seen in Europe is that, with 700 billion euros going into the market, with 100 and some billion euros or dollars equivalent going into the British economy, there was a clear statement by the treasuries to say anti-money laundering laws apply. So we might be opening up the faucets and putting a lot of money out there, but we have to make sure, where does that money go? Are these legitimate businesses? Are there maybe illicit channels where this money might end up? So I think in the US also with the stimulus programs, there might also be an extra push to say we're pumping all this money back into the economy. Let's make sure that only legitimate recipients get it.
That seems like a net good, right? You're going to basically increase transparency and make sure that we know who the as the name implies, who the owners of these structures are. I'm so curious, how do you think something like this would affect maybe the revelations that we saw 2 years ago or so with the Panama Papers and how that whole trail of complex structures and ownership structures led to a lot of tax avoidance and evasion as well?
Yeah, and tax avoidance is really the big problem. Having a company in Panama or in any of the other international business jurisdictions is not illegal per se, right? But it's about where is the money being aggregated and are the taxes paid? And I think what the transparency will bring is, on one hand, a clear set of rules of what does it mean to operate internationally and to make sure that money laundering, which obviously has a negative effect on the economy, on the society, on social services, right, from a funding perspective, that we can dry that up or reduce it. But I think the transparency itself can also be an enabler. If you're conducting international business and you know who you're dealing with, then obviously you have a lower risk associated with that transaction. And through the transparency that will also not only be in Europe or Southeast Asia, the economic hubs, but now in North America, we might for the first time be able to create a level playing field. So if everybody has transparency, then those economies obviously will also be able to engage in more economic activity and cross-border activity. And if you're not part of the group that is enforcing anti-money laundering, you might be blocked from conducting business, right? And I think that this level playing field for business, and I'm not talking about big corporates, I'm also talking about small and medium-sized enterprise. Same rules apply. Same information is available. Same trust and risk view can be taken.
But they have trouble affording that sort of thing. That's been mentioned as one of the competitive disadvantages of being a smaller company. You don't have the economies of scale to meet all those increased requirements. Does company help with that?
Well, I think RegTech in general and companies specifically can help with that because we, by using technology, by taking the manual process, by taking out this really complex, you know, regulatory and compliance requirement part and putting it, tying it in with technology, makes it much cheaper. I'll give you an example. So if you are a payment service provider, because I think that's gives you a good ratio, and you want to sign up a new merchant, a new client, right? That might cost you $1,000 in total compliance costs. And it might take 6 to 8 weeks. If you deploy a platform like Company and other RegTech solutions, you can actually reduce that cost to less than $50. $1,000 down to $50. And at the same time, you have a first time to revenue from a payment service provider of not 6 weeks or 8 weeks, but maybe even same day. What's the benefit for the merchant, the small and medium-sized enterprise? They can go online with their e-commerce shop, accept credit cards, same day. They don't have to wait 6 to 8 weeks, for example. So I think it has to come from both sides. The technology can enable economic activity, reduce this burden, the complexity and the cost, not only for large corporations, but specifically also for small and medium-sized enterprises worldwide.
Yeah, and that's, RegTech doesn't get a lot of the headlines and the attention. It's not one of the sexy kind of companies that garner a lot of coverage, but there's definitely a significant pain point. I mean, it's not something anybody wants to deal with necessarily. I mean, these are, for the most part, a lot of outside regulatory requirements that I think a lot of founders, they just feel like they have to meet. Do you see a lot? What kind of reception do you get? Like, what kind of companies are most receptive to your message?
Well, next to large financial institutions, really also like the tier two banking groups, those that are competing with the large banks and those that are competing with the fintechs, right? So they have to be, they have a different cost structure. They have to be faster. They have to be much cheaper to compete with the fintechs that are, you know, coming up and taking part of the new business. The large corps, which are obviously just there and can afford to have manage the compliance. So it's financial institutions, tier two, some specialized financial service platforms and companies, but also insurers, real estate companies and corporations and businesses that operate internationally. So it's really very broad, not tied to large companies or just, you know, a small group segments. It can be or is being used very, very wide today. And maybe also to give you a sense, in the US, of course, we always think that regulation is a burden, right? Because I have to file more, it costs time. What we sometimes forget to consider is that on the back end of that, if you have to worry about compliance after you've set up your company or onboarded a client, and all of a sudden, you know, or you're in litigation, you have restrictions of your business and so forth, that will always cost much more. And what we're seeing now in continental Europe is that some of the fintechs are saying, wait, this is not a burden. This is actually a game changer. If we can automate and the regulation, the compliance, we can service our clients better. So we're more competitive compared to those that are either doing it manually or fighting regulation because they see it only as a burden. And we have clients today who have not only reduced their overall cost on the compliance side of what we call business KYC or KYB, know your business. They've actually been able to service their clients better and win business because they have the regulatory part under control and managed.
Yeah, that's definitely a concern. If you want to partner up with a bank, let's say you're some kind of fintech, they're going to want to know that you have that covered. And then on the business side, that it's not costing you a fortune either. So I can see how that would appeal that way. But I'm just curious, do you have any interesting stories of criminal activity or fraud that you've discovered as you're monitoring for these companies?
Not directly, because we're not involved in the risk analysis or in the fraud or anti-money laundering analysis. What we do see is that there is often, you know, increased activity and a check of shareholders and connections and the family tree of companies ahead of some public announcements, etc. We don't see directly what our clients are doing, obviously, right? But we do see increased activity of search and so forth from a volume, always ahead of some big announcements out in the news.
KYC compliance is basically based on the fact that you have to verify, one, the ownership, but also the identity of your clients, right? KYC is know your customer. Can you walk us through the process by which you get information from government sources to identify people and any sort of technical or business challenges you've come across in that process?
The big question is always, can I trust the data that I'm using to verify my customer? And there is, big industry around business information and a lot of static databases where a lot of information is captured, aggregated, but the minute it is captured and aggregated, it is already stale. So we've taken a fresh approach and said, okay, data has to be as fresh as legally possible, not just technically possible. And this is why we've established a global network, a real-time network connecting live and directly to commercial registers, to financial authorities and tax authorities, and put a really nifty real-time search engine on top of that. And this allows us to provide our customers with live access to the data at the time that they're conducting business, and at the time that they need to verify companies, and of course the people behind. So you want to know, and I can walk you through that real quickly, is does the company exist? Seems like a very simple question, but if you look at it in detail, not just from an anti-money laundering requirement, but just general business conduct, you need to know, where is that company registered? Is it registered? Oh, okay, it's in this jurisdiction. It is in good standing. Great. But often the company name or the register number or whatever the identifiers are might not be 100% correct. So you need to also have a search capability to find. And then you go into the verification. And the verification is really about the company exists. You go to the government source. You pull the latest data set or the certificate of incorporation, certificate of good standing. And then you have the managing directors. And the managing directors are, depending on jurisdiction, you might have the full name and their address, even birth dates in many countries. And then you can verify that those are the people, the individuals that are allowed to represent the company and sign your contract, right? You want to make sure that you, if you are conducting business or you're setting up an account for another business, that the person signing or the person you're engaging with can legitimately represent your client. And behind that, you also have a lot of checks that you need to not only do on the business, but also on the individuals that are tied to the company, like PEP and sanction screening. So PEP, politically exposed people, sanctions, like the OFAC list in the US, you wanna make sure that you're not conducting business with anybody who's on the sanction list of the US Treasury. And you need to document that too, and that's essential. So it's not just about, you know, an audit proof search, it's also about making sure that you got that whole audit trail. When did you check? What sources did you use? And also, did you document it for future reference?
And this is also a really neat product, because it's not, as you mentioned, it's not static. You're not looking at a thing and saying, you know, this is the ownership or the business status of this entity in this time and space right now, but you can continuously monitor it, which is great. But I'm wondering, from a business perspective, you do offer an API. Are most of your deployments at clients where they buy access to the website, or is it where they integrate the API into their system so they can have a continuous monitoring as well?
It's really split. The API obviously can be integrated into ERP, CRM, or customer lifecycle management systems, or we also have some integrations into core banking system, natively integrated in these core banking systems to bring compliance and KYB functionality directly into the banking layer. And then there's clients that say, okay, we want to get started today. We need to have access to your global network today. And that's where the web application comes into play. It can be deployed, can be turned on within the hour for any client anywhere in the world, with full access and a tool set so they can search, they can verify, they can work together in ensuring that they are compliant with the documentation and they can verify their clients.
You recently raised 6 million euro. Is the plan to expand your coverage to become more global?
So from our coverage today, we cover approximately 200 countries and jurisdictions and about 110 million companies, private companies worldwide. And with our last funding round, we're investing into our product line and obviously continue our expansion of our coverage and working with the governments and getting government licenses so we can interconnect with the primary sources. The funding in the product line is focused on our UBO discovery, that's Ultimate Beneficial Owner Discovery or Shareholder Discovery, which is our AI-based engine that allows us to build up a family tree on demand, pulling the data, analyzing the shareholder information, and playing that out within a minute to show the ownership structure. And the fourth product line is around bringing identity and the money laundering or KYB to the transaction layer of cross-border payment. So cross-border payment today is going through a revolution. All of a sudden, we have technology that allows almost instant payment, that allows much cheaper costs when it comes to cross-border transactions. But the identity and the KYB part is still done manually and not connected to the transaction layer. And this is where we have already taken the first steps, and we've already built the technology to bring identity and KYB functionality in the transaction layer. That means in a very basic setup, you can transfer money within 4 seconds. And our focus is that in 5 seconds, it's also anti-money laundering regulation compliant by ensuring that information about who's sending and who's receiving is shared, and that information is also available to review that transaction.
Interesting that they can do that so, or you can provide that so quickly. I was just wondering, actually, how is the fundraising process these days? You can't meet people in person, or maybe you did?
I would say challenging, to say the least. So our fundraising process was quite interesting, because we were just going into the final list of the investors when everything went on lockdown. So we moved our entire due diligence, obviously, to fully virtual. We had multiple parties. We're oversubscribed for this fundraising round as well. And one funny thing there. So we did everything, digitally, a digital, a data room, et cetera. But one of our investors said, "I have one special request." I was like, "Well, no due diligence. We've gone through the list. Happy to accommodate any more questions." He said, "No, I just need to make sure that the office actually exists. Your company, we verified everything fine, but does the office exist?" I'm like, "Well, nobody's there right now because we're not allowed." But he said, "Well, but I need to document that." So Johanna Conrad, who is also on the board, she went to the office and made a video of every room, commenting every room and saying which teams would be sitting there, and documented our office as part of the due diligence. So I would say it's less than it was a struggle from a due diligence perspective, but it was an interesting request, which we fulfilled.
You had to KYB yourself.
We had to KYB ourselves with physical, almost physical evidence of existence.
From a business perspective, what would you say is the most difficult challenge you have in gathering all these global sources that you incorporate into your platform? Is it getting access to the data in a way that makes sense for your business, so that it's more dynamic and not static? Is it just getting access, period? Can you walk us through some of the things that you've come across as you incorporate more data feeds into the company resource?
The global network is really tied to a lot of infrastructure that we've deployed worldwide. What we see in the register world, in the government register world, that there's maybe only 10% of the registers actually set up to handle API calls, to actually have the infrastructure in place for APIs. So that means we have to look at building the infrastructure on our side to interconnect with these registers. That's the technical aspect. The second challenge is really also ensuring that we're operating under a contract, under a license with the respective commercial registers, financial authorities, and tax authorities. Because our clients require us to ensure not just real time, but we have to ensure that the data is audit proof, right? And audit proof really means that it has to come from a primary source. It needs to be timestamped. It's very essential to know when was that check conducted, and that timestamp has to also be immutable, so it can be used for future reference and also to satisfy regulatory requirements. And the third part is that the true copy, the nature of the data, it cannot be altered. It needs, the date integrity has to be guaranteed. It needs to be a true copy. So you have primary source, timestamp, and true copy. And that's really only possible if you operate under a license or agreement with the commercial registers. And this is something where it differentiates or is different in the different jurisdictions. Some countries are very open. Some countries are very restricted. And there's 1,000 flavors in between. But we also have the team that understands the different regulatory setups, the different jurisdictions, in order to interconnect, to know how we can apply for licenses, et cetera, et cetera.
I'm curious, with all the changes going on in Hong Kong, there's data restrictions and sanctions. And I think Carrie Lam was just added. And then China is issuing sanctions against U.S. senators. Has that been tricky, or what do you think about that?
The trade sanctions are separate, really, of the register world and KYB. So there still continues to be economic activity, right, even if there are sanctions. And that means that also the verification of the counterparties, the verification of companies, of new clients, still has to be conducted. So that doesn't change. What makes it maybe a little bit more difficult is that you need to increase the frequency of those checks as these sanctions are coming out much quicker. So you need to verify a company, but the people behind, obviously you have to check the sanctions. And as this is increasing, we have this new cold war of sanctions, the financial institutions especially need to make sure that they're always up to date. So you cannot rely on data that's 3 months or even sometimes 3 days old. You really need to be on top of this. And this is where technology and our platform specifically can help our clients to be up to date as the quick changes in trade are appearing every day.
You use a lot of algorithms, a lot of machine learning to implement this. What do you wish could be just like a little bit smarter that would make your life easier?
For us, machine learning is important. So the real challenge has been to identify shareholder information that's locked away in PDFs or even image layers, right? So not even readable text. You first have to OCR it. What would be nice if the capabilities of machine learning could automatically also identify the language, and not just the character set. So we always have to train quite a bit for every language. And you also have legal language, of course, in these filings, which might be a little bit different than, the conversational language. So it would be nice if AI could just do that.
Yeah, I know that's I've been a challenge for a lot of people. That's a growing market. And I think that's getting applied a lot to the legal side. I know with lawyers and then across huge amounts of contracts and information that's I think that's a wish for a lot of people.
I think what will be very important in the future with more AI, with more machine learning being used to discover legal documents, to interpret certain patterns like shareholders, et cetera, is that we also have something about know your algorithm, to also ensure that there's transparency of how the algorithm works in order to ensure that there's no gaps or that there is no bias or identifiable bias, at least, because also it can be very tricky. The algorithms can only be as, or the models actually, the models can only be as good as the training and the training set. And I think in the next step, we'll see that there will also be requirements to disclose how the models work without giving away, obviously, the secret sauce and the intellectual property. But transparency will play a really important part in the future.
Yeah, thanks a lot. That's very interesting. And you're doing well in a tough environment, so that's good to hear. Thanks again to Russell Perry, CEO of Company, that's Company with a K, for joining us on the podcast. Keep up the good work.
Thank you for having me again. Steve, John, take care.
You too. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news. And thank you for listening.